segment.
it's really the only good thing of the day.
Yeah.
You will want to move a little closer to the... You both will want to move a little closer to the desk.
Let's do it.
I'm ready. We're already recording. I'm just hanging out.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
Okay. We can't do it, obviously, until you do your little intro.
Yeah, because I'll shut
it
down.
Did you listen to last week's?
That's good stuff.
You actually made it really listenable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I cut, like, it was 30 minutes stuff, and I just kept cutting and cutting. Like, yeah, anyway.
We did. It was just a ramble for last week. It really was. It was, yeah.
And before, when we all had one mic, you kind of had to, like, wait for someone else to stop talking so that you could talk, and now
it's just we all.
Everyone just nails it.
He's
going.
Yeah.
This is be rude. Is there any way to get like any amount of water?
Oh,
sure. I didn't know that was a big deal.
It's really rude to ask for life-giving water.
How about a Sprite?
It's like water.
Sure.
It's like candy water.
It's like water, but better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Brondo.
It's got electrolytes.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what plants crave.
The only thing I'll say with the Sprite, the candy water, when you put it onto the table, it'll echo on the...
Do you want me? I mean, I can just put it on the ground. Like, I think...
Yeah, I mean...
I won't
even
roll
if
around.
There's something...
But you might be able to just set it on top of this pile of napkins and it would roll
the sound of it. It's not a big deal. It's a professional operation around here, clearly.
Yeah.
is it Matt?
Matt.
Okay.
Just making sure.
Let me introduce everybody. All right.
And you're in Trey's class, or are you just...
He's just a
wrote the Walter Hilltop 10 for us.
Yeah,
I got
and
that.
He's a senior KCAI. He's not in my class.
Senior KCAI. Okay, and then you're on the, you're curating this week's silent running.
Well, he's one of the curatorial panel.
Okay, so. Curatorial panel. All right.
Just go ahead, man. We're going to get going now.
All right, I'm sorry.
It's all good.
Okay. Hey, everybody. Happy Friday. It's Trevin again with the Scene Stealers podcast, joined once again by my friends Eric Moline, Trey Hawk, and a special guest. We have Matt this week. He's on the curatorial panel for film school. He's a senior at KCAI, and he wrote our Walter Hill top 10 that you may have read earlier. We've only got one movie. We saw more than one, but didn't really have time to see them before we recorded the podcast, so we only have one to talk about right now, and that's Pain and Gain, the latest from Michael Bay, starring Mark Wahlberg, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, a bunch of other people. Tony Shalhoub, I think, is in there. But first, we want to hit our one thing really quick and talk about what's working for us this week. I'm going to go first because I don't really have any big highlights. My one thing, and it's probably going to be an outdated meme by the time I get here, but Michael Shannon has this great video on Funny or Die where he reads the best sorority letter ever. And I don't know. I've had a shit week, and that was easily the funniest and highlight so far.
It's on
our
Facebook page right now.
Yeah, it's on our Facebook page. So, yeah, hearing Michael Shannon say things like, newsflash, double fucking newsflash! Like, just going on. Or like at the end of the letter where she calls her fellow sorority sisters boners, if any of you stupid fucking boners, fuck this up. So... That's been the go-to highlight for my week. So, Trey, what's yours?
Ooh, let's go to Eric first, because I'm still thinking about what mine is.
I saw a batshit crazy movie called The Paperboy.
Oh, yeah, by Lee Daniel?
Yeah,
Lee Daniel's
the Oscar-nominated director of Precious, his follow-up starring John Cusack as some sort of backwoods, swampy, accused murderer.
Right.
And Matthew McConaughey as the lawyer that wants to get him off. The gay lawyer who enjoys perverted sex.
Sure.
And Nicole Kidman as the slutty housewife, or not housewife, the slutty 40-something who falls in love with John Cusack and Zac Efron.
Isn't there a scene where she pees on his feet?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Just making
sure.
So
Zac Efron, for no reason at all, halfway through the film, and there's a lot of for no reasons at all in this movie, which is actually kind of glorious. The reason that I didn't even rent this movie, I bought it.
You bought it?
Yeah. It was used, and It was used on sale for like $7 or $8, and I said, well, fuck, you know, if it's no good, I can sell it back. And so I will be selling it back. But here's the thing. For no reason at all, Zac Efron gets stung by a jellyfish. Mm-hmm. A lot of jellyfish in this movie, and he has an allergy, and so Nicole Kidman has to piss on him.
Sure.
And his father, Scott Glenn, owns a newspaper. This is all in the backwoods of Florida, like in real fucked up Florida country. And in the 70s, by the way. It's a period.
This is like Pensacola?
No, it's like really fucked up. Like whatever city you've never heard of before.
Have you never been to Pensacola?
I don't remember. We probably have.
We have been to Pensacola.
But
it's
so,
good that you don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah. So
probably blocked it out on purpose.
So there's just a ton of weird shit that happened in this movie for no reason at all other than to be slimy and gross and mildly offensive. And I kind of like that mm-hmm. about it. But then the end is just like I was kind of going with it, going, okay, this is kind of rewatchable. If it goes anywhere interesting at all, I could go with it. But then at the end, and spoiler alert, don't go see The Paperboy. John Cusack has a machete.
What?
Yeah, and McConaughey and Efron go to visit him in the swamp, and he puts McConaughey in a chokehold and goes, "Is this what you want?" And slowly slits McConaughey's throat, and the blood is curdling out of his. I'm just like, "What the fuck is going on?" And Efron's just standing there going, "Ah."
You yeah. actually made me kind of want to see this.
You sold your don't see The Paperboy like very poorly. Like that's all you want to see him.
Well, that's the thing is, it doesn't like I.
I watch no. I'm with you. I watch train wrecks all the time. Yeah. I don't know what it is. He's got another one on Netflix right now called The Raven, where he's supposed to be like a mystery solving version of Edgar Allan Poe, and there's a serial killer who's killing people in the same way that he writes about in his story.
Edgar Allan Poe as Castle.
Right.
Lee Daniels is trying really, 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 really hard to emulate the noir-y, pulpy. 70s movies that since this is set in the 70s, he feels like he has to do the quick zooms and all kinds of, you know, weird camera angles and shots that just like, you know, don't move for a really long time.
Right.
So he's very much trying to use the film language of the 70s here. And it's very self-conscious. I mean, like at every point where he does that, you're like, oh, he's doing that again.
Yeah.
It doesn't work with the story at all. It doesn't make any sense. So I guess it is kind of a fun thing.
Are there just like random cigarette burns that show up?
No, it's not like that. And the film doesn't burn up at the end like Tulane Blacktop. But no, it's now you guys, your interest in it is making me like it better. But I will say that I just kept thinking this is going to start working and it never did.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. I mean, I think Lee Daniels got all that attention around Precious and I've never seen it. I don't really feel like
This is definitely proof that that he's a very hit and miss director. Yeah. And Nicole Kidman, by the way, got a SAG nomination for this.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I did not want to see Paperboy before.
Mm-hmm. And now you do.
I want to see Paperboy now.
I'll let you borrow it. I own it.
Yeah, you're the proud owner of it.
I'll give you $1.
All right.
I'm going to rent it out to my friends for $1 and make my money back.
Good idea. Who's next?
Go for it, man.
I guess the guest's thing of the week is...
Matt, what's your last name?
Lloyd, Matthew Lloyd.
Matthew Lloyd.
I was trying to keep it anonymous in case
people
didn't want to
know. We didn't want people tracking
him
down.
Oh, no! And the walls just come crumbling down. And,
I've got to get out of here!
I'm going to say this Saturday we're doing another film school. I don't know how often... Trey talks about it on the podcast.
Literally every week.
Okay, well, there you go. We're doing a film school this week where we're doing a showing at the Draft House in Kansas City of Silent Running, which is the directorial debut of a guy named Douglas Trumbull, who's mostly known for being a visual effects artist. He's a visual effects supervisor on 2001 A Space Odyssey. What's that one?
Blade Runner.
Yeah, Blade Runner. I'm actually trying to think of the Steven Spielberg one. Close Encounters. And so just a primo special effects guy, and then he made a movie. And unlike a lot of people who make special effects people who then make movies, he actually made a good one. It's just really great. The lead performance by Bruce Dern, and it's 70s Bruce, like 70s, 80s Bruce Dern.
Ooh.
That's
a good Bruce Dern.
Yeah, that's a fantastic Bruce
Dern.
That's some Major Dern.
But, it's great, and it looks... just looks beautiful. And do we want to do the 30? Do
we we have a 35 millimeter print of it.
And so. It's practical effects, right? There's no CGI. This is 1982.
Yeah.
72.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah, no, it's all optical effects. It's some amazing model work. The film's about these. It's set, like, you know, distant future, and there's no more forests on the planet Earth, and there's a Bruce Stern sort of plays this interstellar greenskeeper who, like, keeps all of the remaining forests in the universe in these giant, like, spaceship geodesic domes. And there's just some brilliant model work on all these things. It's really intricate and detailed. And it's a fascinating movie. And it's got three of the coolest, like, little robots in cinema history.
Yeah.
They're named Huey, Louie, and Dewey after the...
Nice.
Who did you say the director was again?
Douglas Trumbull.
Douglas Trumbull. Yeah, you mentioned Blade Runner, and his influence is still around today, especially with the model work. A lot of movies, you know, Trey will hate this, but Batman Begins and The Dark Knight Rises drew a lot of model inspiration from movies like Blade Runner and work that he'd done there. So,
do you hate the art direction of those movies as well?
Yeah, I don't hate the mention of them.
I wonder.
They're not Voldemort.
I worry.
You know what? I'm going to add one thing real quick. Yeah,
so,
I know
two
I'm not
things.
Supposed to do
okay,
this. Two things, but I totally forgot.
Oh, wait, I bet you I know what it is.
The Free State Film Festival.
Yeah.
In Lawrence, Kansas this weekend. If you're not going to Kansas City, they are showing a band called Death, which is the documentary so far that seems to be the breakout of this year.
That looked good.
And which is also going to be at Middle of the Map Fest the week after, but Lawrence is beating Kansas City to the punch by a full week. And they're going to have two of the surviving band members.
What, in
Lawrence? And Cameron Hawk from the Dead Girls is going to be interviewing them.
Oh, nice.
So after the movie...
Four scene stealers?
No, for after the movie, at the Q&A.
I gotcha.
At the live event.
Yeah.
They're also going to have community panels with Kevin Wilmot showing clips from Jayhawkers, Greg Norman showing clips from the Outhouse documentary. Both of these are unfinished works. They're going to have This Is Martin Bonner, which is a film that Warren Cantrell reviewed for us at Sundance, mm-hmm. is also at Free State Film Festival, and a bunch of other stuff. It's actually, for the second year, a really great world-class film festival in Lawrence. They did Compliance last year.
Yeah.
So they were way ahead of the curve on everybody, and it looks like they are going to be again. So if you're in Lawrence this weekend, it's 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
And isn't it $30 for a festival pass?
Yeah, it's insanely cheap.
The pass for Middle of the Map is
25.
It's insane, too.
Yeah.
And they're doing on Friday night, they're doing this thing called on-screen... What is it? On-screen something. On-screen theater or something. I can't remember what it's called. But basically, they're short plays, one-act plays by filmmakers, which use film in the play. So the actors go to the film and the back and vice versa and whatnot. And I saw the version of that they did last year. This is the second year they've done that, and it was fantastic.
Nice.
All right. That's a good. That's better than Paperboy.
Sorry.
You should go see that, not Paperboy.
We were talking about Cusack before we went out.
That's true. Because, he's doing a new shit.
And I've come up with my one thing, and it's a little exclusive, but I want to...
You'd expect nothing less from me.
Well, I mean, it's like...
Nothing but the best.
But I'm really excited about it, and I hope that it means that we'll get a release soon, but I get to see To the Wonder.
Yes.
Right after, on Tuesday, I believe, Monday or Tuesday. So I'm
comes out next week at the Tivoli.
Yes.
Next weekend at the
Tivoli. Yeah. So I'm really excited about that, and it may be my one thing. No, my one thing. I know what my one thing next week will be. So
okay. Anyway, all right.
To the Wonder.
Well, that I hope. Well, I don't know. Maybe that won't be the highlight, that whole exchange. But now we have to talk about Pain and Gain.
Yes.
The new.
We do have
Michael
to talk
Bay.
About Pain
we
and
have
Gain.
To. We're,
we get to. Talk
we
about
yes. I think that's probably a better way of putting it.
You guys get to talk about Pain and Gain. I get to hit the space bar. That's all I'm here.
Awesome.
For.
I'll give a little bit of setup because I really want to hear more from Matt and Eric. But this is based on a true story, where basically these weightlifters, these bodybuilders, these personal trainers. Figure out a way to fleece a guy of all of his wealth and possessions. And they kidnap him, they torture him, they force him to sign all of these documents.
Mm-hmm.
They then figure out that they didn't have a notary, notarize any of these documents. So they find a notary and basically coerce him.
Yeah,
not really strong-arm him. They just coerce him. They manipulate him into notarizing all of the documents.
We don't want to go too far, though, in the plot.
Yeah, but it's a true story. I mean, basically, yeah, I'm not going to go too far. But they do all of this, and everything goes wrong. And in doing it once, they get a taste for it and kind of need, you know, hunger to do it again. In some ways out of need, because some of them spend all of their money and blah, blah, blah. But they do it again, and that one goes really wrong. Like, the first one goes wrong, the second one, like, tops it in how wrong it goes. And it basically is the fallout from all of that. I think that's as good a plot synopsis as you need.
So the thing is that Michael Bay, and I'm just going to come right out with my opinion of the film.
Just go
Michael
for it.
Bay doesn't have the faculties to pull off a story like this.
Hmm.
I kept thinking over and over of Spring Breakers, because it's essentially the exact same story, where these guys get involved in something and they're going to power through all of the bad decisions that they're making. They're going to pretend that what they're doing is righteous and that they have a right to the American dream, and so they're going to continue to do this kind of stuff, even though they know it's wrong. And one of them, in his soul of souls, Dwayne Johnson, the religious member, really knows it's wrong, and he ends up being like, I don't know. I mean, he does some of the worst things, honestly.
But he still is the moral compass, even though he does some of the worst things.
But I kept thinking of, so in addition to Spring Breakers, which I thought was way better done, I kept thinking of Burn After Reading and Fargo.
Yeah. And I mentioned this before, like, the movie started, that one of the things I heard about the film was that, like, it's almost like if you took Pain and Gain and you just took the exact same movie, but you set it in Omaha, Nebraska, it'd be a Coen Brothers film all of a sudden.
I mean, there were too many similarities. And then at the very end, I'm not giving anything away, but two characters sit out and look. This takes place also in Florida.
Yeah.
Miami, right?
Mm-hmm.
These two characters sit out and they're overlooking the ocean and basically saying the same thing that Marge says at the end of Fargo. I just don't understand it. All this mayhem and all this madness, and here you are, and it's a beautiful day. I just don't understand it. And I was like, did you just lift that from Fargo? I mean, it's like, so here's the problem. Michael Bay loves these characters too much to condemn them. And the entire time I'm watching the film, I'm seeing them do stupid things, but it seems more like a Saturday Night Live sketch than an actual movie with depth. And I think Michael Bay has a problem with relating why these characters are the way they are. There's a bunch of surface value shit that's baked into the script. There's this dumb Asian, like a YK Kim kind of guy.
Yeah.
Who Johnny Wu, I think is his
Johnny
name.
Yeah,
played by Ken Jeong. There's a lot of reasons built into the script of why they would do this. But I the only person whose character I actually believed in the film. And I don't know whether that's a problem as well, unless he's going for high parody or satire, and I don't think he achieved that either, is Anthony Mackie. That guy, I believed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was following Wahlberg into anything, and you could tell this guy had pain in his life, he had problems, he really wanted to make things right, and he thought this was going to be that. I felt like Wahlberg was just sort of a one-dimensional guy based on the thesis of the film.
Yeah.
And I thought The Rock, as charming as he usually is, has a bunch of scenes in this movie where he just flubs the punchline, and it's just like way I don't know, it's like his timing is off or something. And Bay, I don't know if Bay knows how to cut for this kind of comedy. Also, the way
A comedy before? Has Bay done a comedy?
Has moments of
The Rock
a comedy.
Is,
I think a lot of his films have Bad Boys.
Armageddon has some comedy in it.
But just the last thing I want to say before I turn it over to Matt is the camera angle stuff. Like, I love the slow-mo shit that he did in this movie, and it was really, it brought out the comedy in it. But then he's also doing his normal Michael Bay action moves, where he's surrounding the characters and looking up at them, and at moments when we are not supposed to be looking up to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that he pulls that off. I don't think that there's any sense of irony in that. I think it's very, very much like he's ogling the women when they're ogling the women, even though we're supposed to think that that's bad. In other words, Michael Bay can't control his own urges to be just like these people when he's showing us how wrong these people are. And I think that kind of sinks the film.
So but, is the movie fun, though?
Yes, okay. It is fun. It's about 45 minutes too long.
Yeah, because it says it's, 210.
Yeah, and it needed to be about 90 minutes. And when they get to the second plot, it's like, really? Like, I was ready for this movie to end. And then the second plot is fun for a while, and then Ed Harris is in there, and it just keeps going, and it's like, please.
What's Rebel Wilson do? What's
Rebel Wilson has a couple really funny scenes. It sounds like she mostly improv'd.
Yeah, she's actually, I've noticed watching the movie that her scenes are shot different, like fairly differently from everyone else's scenes, because her scenes, I think she was hired for her kind of like improv abilities,
yep.
And her scenes sort of have this kind of like almost Judd Apatow feel to them, where it's like five cameras and they're just cutting to
that could even be
lines.
A second unit deal,
yeah.
Like Bay may not have even touched
well it
that.
Was probably a deal where they just had a lot of coverage and they were just letting her do whatever she wanted,
yeah.
And they took the parts they liked
and it's like all, you know, all the funny lines,
right.
Sorry.
So, I don't know, man. I mean, I will say this. I walked out of the theater and I told the people outside, I am mixed on this film.
Yeah.
It doesn't suck, but the more I think about it, the more I dislike it. While it was happening, I was enjoying some of it, and I was laughing out loud at the absurdity of it all, but there was just moments where Bay gets in the way of the material. And
I
don't think he can pull it off.
I have a response, but I do want to hear what Matt has to say first, because he may cover some of the stuff that I have. But I think, I don't know if it's inadvertent or not, but I think there's more going on here than you may be giving it credit for.
I don't think there is.
I'm not sure.
I was looking for it the whole time.
All right. Well,
take it away, Matt.
Okay. Well, I have a slightly... I'm probably going to end up having to couch this a couple of times, and I do agree that there are a lot of flaws with the film, but right now, this is one of my favorite films of the year so far. Like, straight up, like, I thought about it more,
yeah.
And I get a lot of the complaints, but, like, it's just... Can I swear on this?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
I can't, like... There were parts of this movie where I just couldn't fucking believe that this movie existed.
Yeah.
And I was, like, really happy about that. And, like, I think, you know, I think a lot of Bay's direction that worked really well is playing this, like, it's almost...
You can spoil it. I mean, you can... If you want to describe something specific, you can.
Well, I just think it's, like, you know, playing the movie to the tens, to, like, that kind of Bay level, in some ways was distracting. But in other sequences, it was perfect. Like, I remember distinctly the scene where they tried to off their first victim.
Right.
And they keep on failing at trying to kill this guy. And it... And it goes from being, like, a really... I think what my favorite parts of this movie were all things that started out in, like, a really dark note.
Mm.
And I actually, like... I was sitting there feeling, like, really uncomfortable with it. And then, like, they try to kill him, and it goes fucking Looney Tunes. Like, they crash the car, and, like...
They blow up the car.
And
they roll over his head.
And, like, he,
I
like,
mean, it just goes nuts.
That scene with him, like, they blow up the car, and they're all, like... And they're like, oh, yeah. Like, we had to do that. Well, actually, like, The Rock's like, we had to do that. There's that great little exchange. Like, no, you had to do that. But they're all, like, really, like, they're just, like, drained. And then they just watch, like... It's a brilliant decision, because it's the least Michael Bay shot in the movie, where it's just through the windshield.
Because it's a shot from the back of the van,
yeah.
Way in the background.
You just
see
this little guy on fire just sort of stumble out of the car, and it's like, yes!
Yeah.
And it's so great, because you go, like, you're in such a dark place, and you go into humor, but it doesn't feel false. Like, it doesn't ring untrue, which was my biggest fear of the movie, was that it would be, like... really dark, and then go to really, like, you know, big broad comedy, and the switch wouldn't work. And I'm truly, like, impressed how frequently Michael Bay managed to pull that off.
I think that the funny scenes, like that one in particular, was one of the better ones. But I think when the funny scenes fail, they fail in a really, really horrible way. A perfect example of that would be the guy in the hospital bed And then all of a sudden, for no reason at all, there's this annoying, overweight man who's talking at the top of his lungs and being a distraction. And Tony Shalhoub is just like, get this guy out of my room. Well, at one point in the film, the guy runs out of a bathroom covered from head to toe in shit and screaming. And it's just there so that we can see a guy covered in shit and so the audience can run from the screen in revulsion. And it's like, things like that. There were these childish, homophobic jokes that ran throughout. And yes, I understand the characters themselves were homophobic, but in the hands of a better director, it wouldn't have come off like the director was also poking fun at gay people like it does in a movie like Ted. And I compare Michael Bay's style of humor very much to Seth MacFarlane's in that way. But I would say that there were great moments in the script, like when The Rock is barbecuing something out in the open that are just too absurd not to laugh.
Yeah.
When those moments work, I don't think it's because of Bay. I think it's because of the script. So yeah, and his line is great, and he pulls that one off.
Yeah.
But it's really uneven. Mm-hmm. I mean, the tone, like you said, the tone does shift. I would disagree and say that he doesn't find a good balance, and that if he would have cut out, you know, five or six of the really annoying scenes, the ones that didn't work at all out of this film, I think he would have had a better film. And he should have got rid of most of Ed Harris, honestly.
Yeah, there's a weird thing I've noticed. One of my bigger complaints of the film is that it's really oddly edited. Like, the pacing for a lot of the film, it seems weird. And I think, and this is actually something I noticed in Transformers 3 as well, is that some scenes move way too fast, some scenes move way too long, and it seems like, so you know, basic filmmaking, you know, technique is you do a work print, you cut everything you've shot into one big movie, it's never going to be for theaters, and it's always extravagantly long, and I imagine Michael Bay's work prints are like 7 hours long or whatever, and then he has to cut it down, and usually what you do is you go in and you start taking out the big things that don't work.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's like a subplot that is just doesn't work as the rest of the movie, you take out that whole subplot. Scene doesn't work, take out the whole scene. And I wonder if Michael Bay just doesn't want to let go of his like little favorite things.
He can't kill his children.
It seems like his first thing is to go cut out all of the all the unnecessary things.
Remember, he's used to making 2.5 hour long Transformer epics, right? And so when he came in at 2:10, he probably thought he was doing a good job.
Yeah, perfect.
But I think
so move right along.
But I think there's so many scenes in the film where I remember the gun shop bit, which is basically they go to the gun store to get like their stuff to take down the character.
Yeah.
And it's just two comedy bits.
Yeah.
But neither of them really have anything to do with each other within the scene. There's no connective tissue between one comedy bit to the other.
Yeah.
So he just throws them together.
So I think that scene in the script was much longer. I would guess that
could be gone completely almost.
Yeah, and like that scene's not necessary.
Right.
And I think the way it worked was like in the script there was this connective tissue there. It seemed like there would have been.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, well, you know what? The movie's too long. The gun shop scene is boring. What can we do? Should we lose it? No, I think those two comedy bits are funny. Let's leave the bits, but then
I'm going to put another piece of my hypothetical on top of all this. Dovetailing off of what you said, I think that Michael Bay, at least it seemed like while watching this film, everybody involved was having a blast, right?
Yeah.
These are dudes out there being macho and making fun of dudes but secretly really enjoying it.
It's almost like his version of like one of the Ocean's 11.
Right.
Yeah, one of the Ocean's movies.
There you go. It's
because
it's,
those look like a blast to make,
yeah,
but
the Soderbergh
once you get past the first
are like
one,
classy and have these great thrilling plots and lots of improvised clever impromptu dialogue, and then this one just has like the Michael Bay factor amped up. But I think that maybe one of the reasons that he didn't edit it is because edit it more succinctly is because he was having such a good time, and I really felt like this was a lot of guys hanging out and you know playing these heightened versions of Michael Bay characters as really dumb. And like I said, it just seemed like a string of Saturday Night Live sketches sometimes when it wasn't working.
We should mention, or I think it should be mentioned, that this is, and I mentioned this to Trey, as the resident Bayophile here,
yeah.
I would say that
point out that this has been like Michael Bay's passion project for years. Like he's been trying to make this film for over 10 years now. And I remember I told you that, and your response was just like, you know, like he's like, I want to make my passion project, guys, and everyone's just like, no, take all this money for Transformers film instead. Oh, twist my arm about it.
Well, that kind of falls in with my. I mean, who knows? I might just be completely off base, but it just seems like
I think
there's stuff going on.
And I think your critique of it is fine. I think this film, in some ways, because of who Michael Bay is and because of the type of director he is, I think he inadvertently falls into this kind of amazing satire because he's being unironic about it. He has these big low-angle shots of this person who should be despicable. And there were moments where I was like, that's an amazing choice. And I don't think it's a hard choice for him to make. I think he's like, oh, we need that shot where, because it's a shot he throws into everything.
That's what I'm saying, is he's not stretching. The material's the only thing stretching.
He's not stretching, but the inadvertent, like, implications of that shot, I still found delightful.
Well,
And I don't know that it was intentional on Michael Bay's part, but there's something wonderful when this person who, just because he's a doer, like, decides he's going to take this person's money, torture him, almost kill him, not quite kill him, get away with all of it because all of the documents end up being legal, and then decide, hey, I want another piece of the action, and go out and do it again, and that one just falls apart on him. This film absolutely is 30 minutes too long, at least. At least. Absolutely is 30 minutes too long. Right in the middle, and really about two-thirds in, it drags. Ed Harris's character is, it may be miscast, is definitely misdirected. There are things about Mark Wahlberg's character, and there's that you didn't like the casting there and what he did.
Well, I've seen it before. It really was something, like, you know, one of those... What's the Andy Samberg dudes?
Lonely Island?
Yeah, it was like watching a Lonely Island sketch.
Kind of, but there is a sincerity to his character that I found really disarming with a character that I should not have been disarmed with.
It's almost interesting because it is a true, and I have too much knowledge about this film, but... I have read, I think the writer is Suzanne Collins, I'm not sure on that, but the Miami New Times articles that inspired this film, I have actually read, and it's remarkable, like it's crazy how much of this film is fairly accurate to what happened.
Yeah, does it do that based on a true story thing where they show like real life pictures during the credits?
It does? Yeah. Wow. It totally does.
And it actually has a really funny moment in the middle that I don't think we should give away where Michael Bay uses titles on the screen in a really, really funny way.
In a hilarious way. It ruptures the film in a brilliant way.
There's a couple moments where the titles come in. Oh, you know what?
Sometimes they work, sometimes
they don't. Sometimes they're forced. Yeah.
We should also mention this. Every major character and some of the supporting ones at one point narrate this film.
Really?
Yes. It's really bizarre.
It's bizarre, but it's like, and at first, like the second or third time it happened, it really threw me. I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
But the fact that he uses it so consistently, I would say about halfway through, you just kind of accept it.
Until Ed Harris starts narrating.
Yeah, like, I mean, but I think that character is a problem.
But
I think
the weird thing is when
problem,
you watch Fargo or Burn After Reading, and I'm sorry I keep comparing it to these, but it could have been
the same. Yeah, it's kind of unfair.
Well, but here's the thing. Those movies, you don't get to know everything that the characters are thinking. You get to imagine it, and it's stranger and weirder and more fucked up because of it. But in this movie, they explain everything, but in that voiceover.
Sometimes the like it's sort of like
it's like they need to though because he's not doing his job.
Well, yeah. I would say sometimes the narration. Okay, like I think of like films with good narration, and I would say that the narration in this works a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Films with good narration are things like something like Adaptation, where actually a lot of the narration in that film is technically useless. Like it's not explaining something that we need to know,
right?
But what it is it's a sort of trip into this character's mind, and then, like, the effect of being in there and, like, sort of Like showing it in comparison to what's actually happening is what's great about it.
It complicates the character.
I think it makes the character more interesting. And I love like, even like little great like sort of comedy moments that it gets in this film, where like there's the part where they're all going, they're writing up their plans. They're like Daniel Lugo, the Mark Wahlberg character, is demonstrating all the different plans they're going to do for, like, how they're going to take this guy down. Mm-hmm. And he's doing, like, they have all, like, way too much, like, gear on. Like, they're just sitting there. And he's like, yeah, like, we're going to go around the back. We're going to take Point Bravo. And he's like, Navy SEALs can do this in 50 seconds. But considering our improved physique, we can probably do it in 40. And then
we hear Dwayne Johnson.
And Dwayne Johnson clicks in. Like, his narration clicks in. He's like, I have no idea how Daniel Lugo comes up with this stuff. And it cuts over.
He's brilliant.
Yeah. And it cuts over to the Anthony Mackie's character. And he's just like, I knew Daniel was full of shit. But I was ready to go. Like it like that narration is not it. You don't need it, but like
it's. But it's yeah. It makes.
But
it sells
when
the
it
humor.
Works,
yeah,
it's,
absolutely.
It's
funny.
It sells
yeah,
the humor, and it also informs. You know, I do agree. Like Anthony Mackie's character, like
he was great.
He was so good, and he sells it so well. Yeah. And I think like that's something that adds to his thing of like just this like respect he has for this Daniel Lugo character. But I was gonna go back to that character. And the idea of, like, the movie sympathizing too much with him. And I think what's interesting about this being so true and the fact that it actually happened, some of the events actually happened, is that, you know, for a single guy, for this character, for this person to have led these people on such a strange journey doing all these crazy things, there is a certain, like, charisma that he, like, would have to possess.
Yeah.
And, you know... Yeah, like, playing him up too much. I wonder if, like, a lot of this film is sort of, like, the action movie that, like, the characters imagine themselves in, and then the...
Spring Breakers.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of.
I think it was, like the machismo Spring Breakers in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Let's get down to it.
Get down to tax.
I hate ratings.
You invented this system.
Yeah, just bring it down.
You got to do something,
yeah.
Right?
Bring the fist. Bring the fist down.
How many popcorn bags?
No.
out of
yeah.
how many
Have you
jelly
seen
beans?
Tim Heidecker
out of,
and, yeah, and Greg
it's so incredible.
Thing on cinema, it's brutal. They use popcorn bags. And
oh
I'm
yeah,
making fun
it's,
of bad critics.
It's nice. Ruthless.
Here's the deal, man. I'm giving it a minor rock fist down. I'd like to give it a Swiss fist. I think that my review is fair, and I think that anybody that listens to it that is intrigued will go see it anyway. But
you didn't quite upsell it like you did the fucking Paperboy.
Well, you know what? The Paperboy is a weird beast. This is exactly what you'd expect from Michael Bay with some really like weird, absurd script twists. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that Michael Bay was the guy to do it. So minor rock fist down.
All right.
I'm actually going minor rock fist up. This is really uncomfortable for me with a Michael Bay film. But I'm going minor rock fist up. I think some of it's accidental. Some of the stuff that works and works really well for me is almost accidental in the hands of Michael Bay. But as bizarre a true story as this is, and as absurd as it is, I actually think putting it in Michael Bay's hands, and knowing that it was not like somebody put it in his hands, this was a passion project of his, but in his hands, it does these weird things that just make you like characters that you shouldn't like.
It certainly pops.
Yeah, I mean,
Magnitude. Damn it.
I think there's a lot to enjoy about this film, and it definitely, for Michael Bay, it is welcome after the sort of pit of despair that Transformers was.
I do think it's too long. There are major problems. We'll do solid.
Yeah.
I'll do solid rock fist.
All right. Well, there it is. So that's Pain and Gain. That's all we have. So I guess this Friday we'll have reviews of Upstream Color, Pain and Gain, and then The Angel's Share, the new Ken Loach movie.
Ken Loach, yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
All right. So that's it, and we'll see you next week.